We're doing the Rambam's introduction to the Sefer HaMitzvot. We're holding the Ramban's commentary on the Rambam, page 10 in the standard editions, Hey Amud Beis, page Chof in the Frankel editions. And the Ramban is attacking the Rambam over what the Rambam wrote, that every rabbinic mitzvah is really a biblical mitzvah. It is the biblical mitzvah of listening to the rabbis. And the Ramban had been bringing proof after proof, claim after claim, to indicate that we are more lenient over our rabbinic mitzvah, to indicate that we take the leniencies very, very far with regard to rabbinic mitzvot. Last time we discussed that sometimes we'll do two leniencies that contradict one another in a rabbinic mitzvah. The Ramban had quoted, one of his arguments was then technically a person can become a zaken mamre, a rebellious elder, by going against them on a rabbinic mitzvah. So the Ramban is in the process of making claims against this opinion of the Rambam. And we left mid-sentence. The Ramban said, Vihine, Bitul kli meichano kal beinehim meod. The concept of bitul kli meichano, the rabbis took very lightly mipnei sheino min haTorah, because it is not a biblical concept. If you have a vessel that you use on Shabbos, so you are not supposed to place it in a position that will cause it to become unusable on Shabbos. So, for example, let's say the rain that rains is nolat, right? It's muktzeh. So you have a bucket. You're not supposed to take that bucket, which you're using over Shabbos, put it out to catch the rain. Because if you put it out to catch the rain, then it becomes a basis of the Baal Asur. You have an excellent basket that you've been using for bread. Your chicken starts, you're crowing in the morning. You say, oh, it's going to lay an egg, it's going to lay an egg. You quickly run out, take out your basket and say, come here, sit over here where you laid your egg. I want it in the basket. Well, that egg is muktzeh. And if that egg is laid into the basket, then the basket is no longer going to be usable on Shabbos. The basket is going to be a basis for something that's muktzeh. So this prohibition that the rabbis instituted, they called it bitul kli meheichano. Bitul, the nullification of a vessel, meheichano, from its basis, from what it was prepared to be used. It's as though you're shattering the vessel on Shabbos. You will not be able to use it on Shabbos. That's a rabbinic prohibition. It's not a biblical prohibition. And when need be, the rabbis permitted it. So that's what the Ramban says. Wait a second. If this whole institution, this rabbinic institution, is not now becomes biblical, according to the Ramban, how come the rabbis took it so lightly that whenever necessary, they said, okay, so you're mevato kli meichano. It was so light in their eyes, and the reason is, for this concept is not biblical, v'dachuto biyadayim. And you have instances where the rabbi said, do it, even though you will be mevatel kli meichano. וכן במחלוק שבין חכמים הניגו זה כמו שאמרו בגמר עבודה זרה אחד עושה ואחד מתיר. And we have the following rule in the Talmud in Avodah Zarah. The Talmud, this is a very important line in the Talmud, that Zayin Amurav in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara gives us a rule. We don't have the strength to apply it ourselves, but this is the rule that the Talmud itself applied, that the Rishonim applied, that the Shulchan Aruch applied, that the great sages applied. We simpletons, our generation, we don't apply it. But the rule of halacha over the last few centuries, over the last millennium and a half since the Talmud, one of the rules as to how you define halacha is the following line in the Gemara. The Gemara says, if you have two rabbis, two differing opinions, echad oser, one says it's prohibited, ve'echad matir, one says it's permitted. Im haya echad gadol b'chokhma uv minyan, if one of the rabbis was smarter, he had many, many more students who would question him and learn through what he says and challenge him. He is bigger bechokhmah in his wisdom and b'minyan in the number of students who attend his classes, who question him, who challenge him, who learn from him. Halecha chacham. So then, go by his opinion because he's the bigger one.
If you were to go by the other one's opinion, is that lesser opinion considered invalid?
That's a long discussion. It's a good question for a Thursday night. It's a good question. We can't deal with that now.
And is there a specific ratio? Like, is it like how many more? I mean, do you have a cutoff?
That's another good question. I don't know the answer to that, so I can't answer you on Thursday night. The im lav, but if one of them is not bigger than the other, so how do you know who to go by? Bidoraitan, a biblical mitzvah, halecha hamachmir. Go with the more stringent opinion. You have two opinions, you don't know which one to go with, you don't know which one is bigger. It's a biblical mitzvah, go with the more stringent opinion. Uvid Rabbanan, and on a rabbinic question, the rule is go with the lenient one. Now wait a second, 50-50, I don't know who's right, right? They're both of equal stature, they're both just as big, why am I going with the more lenient one? Especially according to the Rambam that says any rabbinic mitzvah is really two biblical mitzvot. What am I doing going with the more lenient opinion? So if you recall, at the end of last week we said, really to these last claims, the Rambam can give a simple answer, right? The Rambam can say, when the rabbis instituted it, what we call heimamru veheimamru, they said and they said. If they're making the institution, the Torah backs their institution, but they could say, within our institutions, we make the following clause. When in doubt, go with the lenient opinion. When necessary, you have room to be lenient with the following clauses. If they're the ones who are instituting it, they could say whatever they want. And you'll ask me, well, why would they do such a thing, right? If everything they say has biblical, has the Bible backing it, has the two mitzvot and Torah backing it, why would they suddenly say be lenient? So we could say they wanted to make a discernment between what they institute and what the Torah says to do. Even though the Torah backs them and we have two mitzvot to do whatever they say, at the end of the day, they wanted us to know this is the Torah and this is them. So they made completely separate guidelines. So the Rambam could easily answer these claims of the Ramban. These claims, you know, at first glance you say, wow, knockout punch, what claims? On the other hand, if you stop and think about it, there's a simple answer to these claims. But, okay, who are we to count the Ramban? On the other hand, we have to understand where the Rambam's coming from. Let's continue. V'gdola misham ruod. And the rabbi said an even greater leniency. B'shel sofrim, the Talmud says the following story. They had a circumcision. They had a child that needed hot water. And it's Shabbos. And the water spilled. So Rabbah says, go get the water from my house. I have hot water. So Abaye, the student, says, but they have to go through the courtyard. And there's no Eruv. So he says, go do it with a non-Jew. So Abaye has questions, and he says, go do it. And Abaye says, I have questions. And Rav Huna tells him, it's a rabbinic prohibition, right? It's bringing it with a non-Jew through a courtyard. First let us do what the rabbi said, then you'll ask your questions. They do it, and then they say, okay, now what were your questions? What were your challenges on this ruling? So they were interested in hearing what Abaye had to say. I mean, Abaye is no little kid. He's a rabbi. He said, I have questions. How could you do this? But they said, first we're going to do what Rabba said. Afterwards we'll hear you out. Maybe you have a point. Why? Bidrabanan, that's the rule that Ramban is quoting. The rule is, on a rabbinic issue, first you do, then you ask. So it doesn't mean do whatever you want on a rabbinic issue and then verify. Obviously here you see the first two questions he asked, they answered. But when they saw he'd have more questions, they said, hold off. The baby needs the water. Let's go bring the water. Afterwards we'll talk. B'shel Sofrim, the rule the Talmud says in Erevin is, on rabbinic issues, osin ma'aseh, we will sometimes do what a rabbi tells us to do, even though we don't have all the answers yet, v'chakach danin, and then you could question him. What's the worst case scenario? You transgress the rabbinic thing, the rabbi, based upon his understanding, said it's okay. Do what he said, afterwards asking your questions. Because it's a rabbinic. Because it's a rabbinic prohibition we're talking about. ובפרק מי שהחשיך אמרו לעניין שבת מהו דתם הלב סנועת נמי חששו כמשמלן. And the Talmud tells us in the end of Shabbos, in the end of the tractate Shabbos, says, I would have thought that when it comes to Shabbos, if you have a rabbinic decree, but you're going to lose a little bit of money in the performance, maybe that's reason enough to annul the decree. So the Talmud says, no, it's not reason enough. It has to be that you have a substantial loss. Then the rabbis say, for for substantial loss, there are many institutions that the rabbis say, we forego our institution, so you shouldn't have a substantial loss. You need to know the rules when we say that. When you don't say that, but the Talmud says, I would have thought that even for a minor loss, the rabbis would forego their institution. You see how lenient the rabbis were willing to be over their own institutions. If their institutions have the power of a biblical mitzvah, how could they do that? Why would they do that? Shuchidush etzlam, because to them it seemed like a new concept, sheinam dochin divrei sofrim, when you don't push off what the rabbi said, afilu vishum said what? They even entertained the thought that for a minor loss, that would overweigh a rabbinic institution. You see, they entertained the thought. Umetamin koanim et atzmam betumah shel divrehem lirot malchei umot olam. The Talmud says that when they'd hear the Caesar was coming, they'd hear a king was coming, they'd all go to see him. The rabbi said, it's a good thing to see kings. It's a good thing to see aristocracy. You see all their pride, you see all their honor, and then when you'll see real honor, when Mashiach will come, you'll know to compare. You'll know what was going on in this world, how fake it was compared to real honor. So how important is it really to go see Obama's motorcade? No. You hear that his motorcade is going, the rabbi said, go take a look so that when Mashiach comes, you'll have perspective. How important is that? So we think, okay, it's a good thing. The rabbi said, there's something to learn from that too. Tells us the Gemara, Kohanim are biblically prohibited from becoming defiled, from becoming tameh. There are forms of rabbinic tumah as well. The Kohanim would jump over coffins, which would give them rabbinic tumah, to go and see the kings. Now, wait a second. The rabbis instituted, you don't do that. The rabbi said, a Kohen that does that is tameh because they didn't want Kohanim doing that. So there's this rabbinic tumah that the rabbis made a special institution to preclude Kohanim from leaping over the coffins. But in order to see a king, to see Obama's motorcade, the rabbi said, go ahead, leap over the coffins. So how important is this rabbinic institution? It's very important, but how lenient are you with it? You're very lenient with it, even for the sake of seeing a motorcade. Why? Rambam, if every rabbinic mitzvah has two biblical mitzvot backing it, why were the rabbis so lenient?
Why would jumping over a coffin only be rabbinic?
Because there is a gap of a tefach al tefach where the tumah is encased. Shehu chidush umetamin kohanim tatzman b'tumah shel divrehem, and the kohanim would become tameh in a rabbinic tumah lirot malchei umot olam, to witness the Gentile kings, kedei shim yizkeh, so that if they merit to see the Messiah, yavchin ben malchei Yisrael malchei umot olam, they'll be able to discern between true honor and the honor that they just witnessed. Ve'af b'onshin shel divrehem shel chachamim en lehem ela nidui. And even when someone has the goal to go against the rabbinic institution, the rabbi said, on Chol Moed you don't do work. He says, huh? So they said, I don't do work. I'm going to plow my field on Chol Moed. What's the worst thing you could do to him? You can put him in halachic ostracism, in nidui. Kmo shamu, like the Talmud says, midnadin al shnei yamim tovim shel galuyot. If someone says, I'm not keeping the second day Yom Tov in Chutz Laretz, I have a calendar, I know when it's Rosh Hashanah, I know when it's Sukkot, I don't have to keep 2 days Yom Tov. What do we do to him? So the Talmud says, we put him in nidui, halachic ostracism. Vamru, which is, we keep 4 feet away from him, we don't combine him to a minyan, we don't give him an aliyah, we stay away from him.
Is that for good or just for that second day?
No. Nidui is also, we curse him, we tell him drop dead. The court makes a declaration, we wish so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, should drop dead.
Okay.
And it worked. Wow. I mean, people did drop dead from it. But at the end of the day, they didn't take any active measures against the person. They just put this halachic status of nidui on a person who would transgress our rabbinic institution.
Wow.
And we will pause here for a few minutes and take up Ezrat Hashem shortly. Baruch haba.